Welcome to the Revenue Lounge, a podcast for revenue operations professionals who want to understand the various facets of this important go-to-market function. In each episode, the team at Nectar interviews revenue warriors on how they are reimagining revenue operations in creative and disruptive ways, and what are their secrets to building a scalable and predictable revenue engine. Let's get started.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Revenue Lounge. I'm your host, Randy Likas, and today we're going to dive into the topic of account-based marketing and the evolution from ABM as a channel to a go-to-market strategy. And joining me today is Karina Owens. Karina is an expert on account-based GTM. She's a fractional leader and advisor to many firms, helping them with their account-based strategy and execution. Karina, thank you so much for joining us today.
Randy, thanks so much for having me here. I'm so glad we finally get to do this.
Yeah, I am as well. So, Karina, I usually like to start these episodes and just maybe ask you a little bit about your career journey, if you don't mind walking us through that. How did you start working in the world of account-based, and what's the type of work that you do with your clients today?
Sure. Yes, happy to. My background actually is in education. So prior to joining the world of B2B, I was actually a teacher. I taught abroad for a little bit in Costa Rica, came back during a recession, so always knew that there was going to be a different path for me. But I only mention that to say that I've been pleasantly surprised over the last several years that there's many educators that have made the leap from teaching into marketing or sales. Largely during COVID boom, but still interesting to see how those can overlap. But I've mostly spent my career for the last 14 years in B2B SaaS. Oftentimes I've been hired as the first time marketing hire. And I think that that's done my career really well because I've had to learn how to be a RevOps professional. I've had to learn how to be an ad specialist, a paid specialist. I've had to learn how to do email marketing, the full landscape. So it's given me a really good understanding as a generalist. But around 2018, I started to become a little bit well-known, largely in the LinkedIn sphere, for account-based marketing. And at the time, I wasn't even calling it account-based marketing. It was just something that I was putting into practice with a couple of different tools, no like big box ABM platform at the time. But it was this idea of targeting accounts that are best fit for us, so those like lookalike accounts where we are supposed to win, and then putting more budget, resources, time, and energy into those. So from there, I have taken that kind of philosophy into building programs for account-based marketing for organizations that are selling to enterprise. So my last in-house role was doing exactly that for Gong. And now I'm doing this on my own fractionally for several different types of organizations and B2B SaaS.
That's wonderful. So when people will bring you in, if you think about the spectrum in terms of where they are in their journey, what do you typically see as far as where your clients are at and what help that they need?
Yes, great question. I think that most organizations that come to me have probably tried to dabble with deploying account-based marketing strategies in their organization, and all of them looked like a basically sales wish list approach. So it wasn't really grounded in data outside of anecdotal data, like really what are those logos that people would just love to have, these whales, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes when I come in, I mean, the very first exercise is to try and understand really what is their ICP and pressure testing that against what the organization, the sales team, the marketing team thinks their ICP should be, and validating that based on their own historical data. And I think oftentimes what's really surprising is my clients will come back with some aha moments from that analysis exercise. Like an interesting data point I think that one of my recent clients found was it took at least one opportunity, on average two, that had to have been closed lost previously in the last 2 years in order for that account to have been a closed one opportunity. And it just paints the picture of like, we really have to saturate the market with our messaging, the problem we solve, who we solve it for, in enterprise in particular, for much longer than I think any sales or leader would like to think.
Yeah. And when you look at the historical data as part of that initial analysis, what is the type of data that you're looking at as far as source data? Is it CRM? Is it marketing automation? Where are you pulling that from in order to do that assessment?
Yes, I think baseline CRM is where I would recommend any organization start. So looking at closed loss opportunity notes, trying to determine who were the contact roles that were associated with that opportunity, what were their roles within the company, if they are a little bit more mature in how they're doing attribution, then leveraging things like the different types of touch points from a marketing perspective before they became an opportunity, how much time did they spend on the website, what sites in particular, what was the referral traffic. Those are just a lot of different main components that I think most organizations today could start at. I think the misconception often is that CRMs are really messy and it's not consistent, and so there's not a lot of patterns that you can derive from it, but that's totally not true. There's usually enough, even with some of the worst CRMs I've seen, insight that you can start to gather when you're like really digging into the weeds of looking at closed lost ops and closed won ops.
And when you're doing that work, most SaaS organizations are not selling to one person, right? There's multiple personas or people that are being involved. And is part of the work that you do also like that persona segmentation work to try to understand, like, when we put these programs together, what's the messaging that's going to resonate with each one?
Yeah, I mean, definitely what is the messaging that's going to resonate, but also when did those types of personas enter the deal and how did that impact the deal? So a lot of times I think we have some of the non-fun personas, like let's take like sourcing, procurement, legal, enter the deal really, really late. And then what we see is that actually pushes those deals to next quarter, maybe the next fiscal year. So a lot of what I'm looking at is definitely messaging, but before we even get to like, what is that thing that moves the needle? I'm often looking to for when did they even enter that sales cycle with us for, and how did that impact the result?
Yeah, that's really interesting. So we work with organizations in, particularly in the enterprise, it's much more common where when they look at their historical data, they look at their closed won or lost opportunities, and they may have like one person tagged to the opportunity, right? Because they stamped the person when the lead came in, and then sales ran with it, and everybody that kind of came in and out of the deal, sales doesn't take the time to update them, right? And so we're left with a very little understanding of who was involved as opposed to who was really involved. And so is that consistent with what you've seen? And if so, how do you overcome that?
Yes, I don't think there's a single case, whether I've been in-house or when I'm working as a consultant, where I haven't seen that be the case. Every organization is so guilty of that, even the ones that preach the opposite, right? But I think that what you have to do is you have to be really analytical and do a lot of detective work to think about, okay, well, what can I see in some of these call recordings as an example? Yeah. Not always will that get mapped back to the CRM, but it's definitely ways that you can start to spot like, oh, well, here's an interesting trend for where the deal started to trickle down. Somebody new entered the organization. Well, let's find out about that persona. Oh, looks like they were a customer of our competitor at their previous organization. So many of these like in market signals, which you're alluding to, are critical. And I think most organizations right now aren't set up to capture those things in real time. So a lot of times when I come in, it's a lot of backtracking, like looking at the historicals to paint that picture. Yeah. But I would say very few organizations right now are set up to be very proactive about capturing that, so you can then be reactive to that signal.
Yeah. And then as far as like organizationally, ABM as a practice, are you typically working with someone who maybe has hired an ABM leader, or are you working with the CMO? And I guess that'd be part A of the question. And then part B is what other, the other stakeholders in the organization, sales, RevOps, that you also work with?
Yeah, it's been very interesting. I would say like the past year, I've mostly been approached by CEOs who are looking for really a fractional to maybe full-time hire of a marketing leader. And it's very interesting because they're actually leading with ABM as the strategy and the discipline that they're looking for in that kind of hire. And so that's been like a very pleasant surprise for me, just because historically, when I've been in-house, really selling the concept of what ABM is to the executive is just really, really challenging. But I'm seeing quite a turn from that perspective. But I will say that it's really hard for organizations to hire a marketing leader that understands ABM as like a discipline and not as a channel. So even when I'm in some of these roles, a lot of what I'm doing is I'm helping them like find that right profile to hire full time so that I can help figure out like what they need most. Because I think often like there's camps of ABM is seen as field marketing. So think like regional events, right? Then it's seen as digital. So paid ads, display ads, social ads, et cetera. There's very few marketing leaders that kind of come to the table like you see with demand generation leaders. That's just much more common, I think.
Yeah.
So yeah, I answered that kind of like two parts in a different way. But I think what's wonderful is that we are seeing account-based marketing. So many people are talking about it now from the lens of like account-based go-to-market, which is fabulous, and I think actually encompasses a lot more of what ABM is as a strategy and emotion versus seeing it as a tactic or a technology.
Yeah, and that alignment is so critical. So it's not like sales is not saying, well, it's just this thing that marketing team is doing and they're passing me over these leads. When it's driven from the top like that as a strategy, we've got buy-in across the organization as opposed to these sort of siloed groups. Yeah. So that's a great segue as far as how maybe traditionally it was seen as a channel or a tactic. What we're also seeing similarly is companies who maybe haven't made the investments. They're not seeing the results that they thought they would. And so they're now bubbling it up and thinking about it more as a strategy itself. I guess, what does that shift mean in practice for like how organizations structure their marketing and sales efforts and alignment?
Yeah, I think that a lot of this comes back to like fiscal year planning. So I think the most successful programs that I've deployed have been when we're actually planning in conjunction with sales, territory mapping, what those target accounts are going to be, what we're reporting to the board. And all of that is done like a good quarter before you're launching your new fiscal year. That's not to say you can't always pivot and react. But I think the efforts where we have taken that, both in-house and when I'm consulting, you see the results much quicker. People adapt to the program much quicker. It's, again, to your point, set as these are our big bets for the year versus these are our must-win strategies for the quarter. I think, too, anytime that it's grounded in, okay, these are the inputs that we're going to do in order to achieve said output, also helps people pick up the program a lot quicker. I think the hard thing with ABM is that the golden bucket at the end of the rainbow is, of course, booked revenue. But when you're in enterprise, these things just take a lot longer. And I think, unfortunately, what happens a lot of times is we start to then not see that target get hit as quickly as we'd like. And so we start to point the blame again from sales and then marketing. And so much about, I think, educating internally across different departments about what ABM is, showing them these are all the steps we're going to take. By X mark, we should see this. And it shouldn't be revenue, right? It could be metrics like increased time on site from the right accounts, increased identified stakeholders, right? Those softer metrics, I think, are less common to be reporting from a marketing perspective to other departments when you're not doing ABM. I just don't think it's expected. Nobody cares. You see it as fluff metrics.
Yeah.
When you are on board that these are the exact inputs we're going to do and we're expecting to see X, Y, and Z at each stage, then it's easier to buy into, okay, this stuff does take time. We already knew that, but they can stop seeing ABM as a silver bullet and instead just a strategy that takes time. And here are different ways we're going to prove success or not along the way.
Yeah. So a lot of companies will take different models, right? And I know you're familiar with this. There's like one-to-one, one-to-few, one-to-many. What have you seen be the right way to structure? If we think about these different components, how should companies think about the different one-to-one, one-to-many, one-to-few?
Yeah, I think my simple answer for that is you should probably be thinking about this like in a stage-based mentality. So one-to-many programs often look like a little bit of personalization. Maybe that's just from a firmographic thing, like an industry standpoint, but maybe you're not going so personal in your campaigns and your outreach to the exact business use case because you may not know that they're in market yet or not, right? So the juice isn't quite worth the squeeze yet.
Yeah.
But when you are working an opportunity, especially if it's a really highly competitive opportunity, especially if it's like a new industry where we haven't proven a ton of success with initially, that's when those one-to-one programs become much more meaningful and much more impactful. And I think, again, kind of back to our earlier point, these shouldn't always be just those easy-to-win accounts in your ABM program. By nature, we should be deploying more resources and more budget for things that are going to be more challenging to win, areas where we haven't proven a ton of success yet initially, so that we can collectively learn and deploy the best buying experience for these accounts that we likely can win more of in the future, but we have to do a little bit more legwork on our end to do that. So simple answer to that is think about it from a stage-based perspective. Has the account yet earned enough budget, time, and resource to go into that one-to-one program? And I typically equate that back to sales stages. So that would be my simplistic response for that.
Yeah, very helpful. Thank you. You know, what we've been seeing more and more is companies who are, I guess, getting a little more sophisticated around moving to an account-based strategy as opposed to just a channel is setting up these centers of excellence, if you will, around ABM, which has the cross-functional leaders together. Are you an advocate and a believer in that? And it would be the first question. Second question, what do you think some of the trade-offs are if companies don't do that?
Yeah, 1,000%. I think that, honestly, that's just good marketing to do internal marketing, which is what I equate to when I hear centers of excellence. But yeah. The reality is that marketing teams are usually so strapped in with resources, personnel, budget, et cetera, that they don't take the time to properly enable the rest of the organization. But when I hear centers of excellence, I hear internal marketing, and I'm a massive fan of internal marketing. And then it blends very well with, okay, we're jointly going to market together. I think that you can still do all the prep work to have centers of excellence. And so that could be in your SharePoint drive, that could be in a Notion doc. It doesn't mean that somebody is going to go to those resources and continuously re-enable themselves over time. So I think a caveat to that is you can do all the prep work to enable your teams the best you can. It doesn't mean it's going to get adopted. And as a former educator, I know that pretty well. There's so many different learning styles. There's so many different ways we have to constantly repeat ourselves to death to different stakeholders like parents and departments of education, et cetera, et cetera. So all that to say is there's really no such thing as over communication. Think about different ways that audiences like to consume content. So maybe you have a monthly newsletter that just gets super quick and to the point, here's what we're doing, here's what's working, here's what's coming up next. You can also do things like take that newsletter and then push it to something like Google LM or Notebook LM, and then that's going to create like a 5-minute podcast. So somebody could consume that while they're walking their dog or doing their laundry or picking their kids up from school. I would also suggest like just holding an ABM office hours that you do monthly, quarterly, so people can drop in and drop out as they like. Record those so that people can then be unafraid to maybe come to those later because they can hear their sales counterpart ask a question and get an understanding of how to engage in these types of programs. So they are so important. They take a lot of work and they are not ever going to be like 100% adopted, but the juice is completely worth the squeeze. And I think it is the way to get multiple departments in your organization on board with something like an account-based go-to-market motion.
Yeah. You know what? I want to transition and talk a little bit about a trend that we're seeing quite a bit, which is that if you look at individual leads, MQLs, the conversion and the amount of waste that companies have in trying to develop that, they want to do something different. And I think ABM as a practice is one way to do that, right? Moving away from individuals and looking at accounts. But even accounts, you know, MQAs are just still accounts. They're not necessarily buying groups within the accounts. And so there's a lot of people who are really leaning into this idea of opportunity-based marketing, where we still leverage a lot of the principles of ABM strategy, but we create stage zero opportunities really early. And when we start seeing intent and signal and things like that, we connect that to an early stage opportunity where maybe we pipe in like what we're seeing at the top of the funnel, but also maybe the historical people who've been involved in evaluations in the past and start and serve that up to maybe a sales development team who can start triangulating with the different folks. Is that what you're seeing as well? Or are you still seeing companies focus strictly on MQAs? And then I guess, how do they operationalize that in terms of like, how do they pass that on for people to take action?
You are hitting like such a nerve with me and what drives me like bananas about all of this jargon and ways of doing things. And I'm not going to have a great answer, but I'm happy to go back and forth with you on this. So I think like, again, all of this sadly is rooted in technology telling us how to do attribution. Yep. So we're moving away from like marketing automation platforms, form-based, like which is the MQL. And now we're moving away from big box ABM platforms, which is the MQA, right? Like it's all just a way to prove ROI on the tools that we're using.
Yeah.
And it's very often never grounded in like any sort of reality for the business. So even what you're saying now, I'm like skeptic. I'm like, why are we now suddenly talking like this, right? Like what is the next technology that's trying to sell us on this opportunity-based go-to-market, which to me is like, well, now you're just describing sales. It's all a lot anyways, but I digress. I agree with it because I think it's a little bit more grounded in the buying experience, right? I don't think that the way we treat MQLs is a proper buying experience. I think it's very reactive and self-serving. I do think that paying attention to things that are like in market signals and then actually doing effective outreach that's tailored to that signal to me is more appropriate than a lead-based model or even an MQA. So I think it's all about how are we like deploying that with the buying experience. So short answer, I'm more of a fan of that than I'm a fan of the way we used to do things.
Yeah, yeah. I think the one benefit that I've heard communicated is that because our technology systems are so siloed right now and they're not connecting data, right? And you mentioned attribution. It's like we've got these programs and we're spending this money on these different campaigns or tactics. But to go back to our earlier point, we don't necessarily know when they're coming into a deal because sales isn't doing that. And so it's hard for us to connect the impact of that. Well, and I think, you know, just making the argument for the opportunity basis, if we can connect them to the opportunity at the very beginning, we can then follow that journey all along. So that's, I think, where a lot of people are really leaning in. But there's hesitancy.
Yeah. No, I'm a huge fan of that. And I think that's actually, again, bringing sales and marketing more into being measured off of the same goals and being more tightly aligned to the whole buyer's journey. So yeah, big fan of that.
Yeah.
I like the way you described that much better than the way I did.
Yeah. So you brought up a really important point, which is this argument around marketing sourced, right, for sales sourced and these metrics, you know, hey, I hit my goal, but sales misses their number. Well, that's not good, right? So how important is it in an ABX strategy to have common metrics across sales, marketing, customer success?
To me, I think that's the baseline for a successful launch of an ABM program. And in fact, I put that into like how we're measuring success is if we are actually moving more towards a really shared goal. Yeah, I think it's crucial. I think that it also gets the teams to do really what they're in seat to do a lot better because it's taking away of them just fighting for this arbitrary number because the board told them that they have to do so many MQLs and the sales had to open so many net new meetings. Like, that's all just a bunch of garbage at the end of the day if you're not really driving the results. So I think it's a much better way. And I would encourage people that when they're launching an ABM program for the first time to include that as a metric of success of the program is if you really are moving towards that shared goal and kind of fighting for that attribution of who sourced it or who influenced it. If we're hitting the collective goal, then let's move towards measuring collectively. And I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah. And the other thing I think it also helps do is like marketing's job is not just to develop leads, right? We want to develop engaged contacts on opportunities to help us move deals forward. And by having a shared goal, marketing is then going, well, how can I help you reach that persona that we're missing or get the key person that we know is important, right? If we look at all of our struggles, we know it's important. How can we help you move that deal forward? But you can't have that when you're just measured on leads alone, right?
100%. Yeah. And that's where marketing drops off. And that's why we see that so many traditional marketing programs don't have any kind of late stage nurturing programs or deal acceleration plays because their job is done. Like they got the contact in the door, they got that demo request or they got that meeting, they're now done. But when you are, to your point, and that's a metric, right? An engaged contact of XY persona, that's another one that should be part of your program and measuring that throughout the entire journey, even post-signature, I think is crucial.
Yes.
And I think you can back that into your CAC, right? Everything we're talking about is making marketing much more of a strategic player in everything.
When
we're getting away from that and moving more towards like, okay, well, how are we impacting the lifetime value of the customer?
Yeah. So when you're talking with the executives that bring you in to help consult, do they get that fundamentally, or is there a lot of education and change management you need to help them manage through that?
It's a good question. It's changed a lot, even just in like in the last couple of years. But one of the things I used to do, like even when I would be interviewing for in-house roles, is I would ask everybody, especially the executive, to just define for me what account-based marketing means to them. And I would get wildly different answers. It would be direct mail. It would be to close more business. It would be to help sales get more deals. Like it's just wildly across the board. And so that's a really good opportunity to just centralize of what is everybody really thinking and what is really the goal we're driving towards. And we should be shaping your account-based marketing program around that. But I will say that I think executives today, just I think with this whole do more with less mentality and just how oversaturated digital has become and just the reality of funding for a lot of these organizations, we are just now starting to have more real conversations about what actually moves the needles. What does this board deck actually mean? Let's really get into the report. Let's get some real insights. Mm-hmm. So much has, I feel like, with these executives gone away from like checking it off just to check off, because the reality is everything's just gotten harder and everybody's in that same boat. So strategies like account-based marketing are being taken so seriously, even at the VC level. So the conversations have improved drastically, but I think it took a lot of like hard realities to get people to start thinking a little bit differently.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Okay. Let's talk a little about more tactics, if you will, but intent and signals, because I think for some companies, they think we're going to go buy this ABM platform and we're going to go invest in these second and third party data sources. And that's going to be our ABM program. And sadly, that's not really the case, right? You got to think through the things we talked about earlier around the strategic goals and the KPIs and the measurement and everything else. But what's your thoughts on signals and intent? What I mean by that is, I think I've actually heard you say once before, like there is no such thing as like a golden signal, right? Or a silver bullet signal. It's like the combination of signals together that helps us really understand whether something is a good lead or not. So can you talk us a little bit through what's your perspective on intent and signals and how best to use them?
Yeah, I think that signals is the new rebrand of intent, because I think intent started to get such a dirty word, because to your point, it was positioned as, well, you can see that they were searching for your competitor name, so now that's going to change the game. But to your point, it's the marrying of signals, I think, that make most sense to really like position, okay, this is somebody that we should maybe push up to a tier one, or this is somebody that we need to have sales follow up with. What you have to have a couple of different things, I think, playing at a certain time. So what I like to say is, for when you're thinking about signal based plays or tactics, oftentimes there's thousands of signals we could be making sense of on any given day, but more often than not, if you're, let's take a buying signal of a former champion has now joined the opportunity that you have not yet set a meeting with, marrying that with something like, okay, and we've also seen in the last month that these types of personas are spending time on webinars or visiting the pricing page, that might mean we have a real opportunity here that maybe now might be in market. I think what we have to be careful of as marketers is, we now have, in my opinion, like so much data that we can make sense of, that we have, like, you'll have people in one or two camps. One is people that are just going to react on every signal, send all the email alerts, all the Slack alerts, set up all the different nurture plays. And what happens there is it gets lost, it's noise, it's messy, and it's spammy, right?
Yeah.
Then you have people, I think, that maybe make sense of maybe like 2 to 5 main core buying signals, and build programs around that and enable their sales teams, their BDRs, their marketing team on like the purpose of evergreen programs. So I think that oftentimes too, what I tell people is that there's hundreds of signals that you could analyze and make sense of, but there's probably one or two out of all of those that are going to make the difference between whether or not you create pipeline and close business or not. Build programs around that, and then if you have time to make sense of the rest, fantastic. But it often comes down to like just a couple of signals that probably matter most for evergreen campaigns and playbooks.
Those one or two that you mentioned that are probably really strong, is that horizontal, meaning applicable to most organizations, or is it individual? I'd love to do some examples. Like, what are some examples of some really good signals that you think mean something?
Yeah, so I'll give an example. A client that I had that was in B2B for government contracting. Basically, they provide specialized solutions on top of CRMs like Salesforce and Microsoft Dynamics. Based on looking at their historical data analysis, we found that when we identified by a third-party signal that the company was searching for employees to build those solutions in-house for those companies, or were looking to source an RFP for those solutions, if we went and marketed to them when we found that signal, that was incredibly successful for us. We found that we were like entering the stage a lot sooner than our competitors were. So that's an example of, that's not even a signal we own, right? That's like a third party signal, but we were able to spot it. And once we figured out, okay, we're actually this quarter, most of our at-bats came from acting off that signal. That's a signal we need to double down on.
Yep.
So it does take, I think, in like foresight to think about okay, when we're even investing in measuring these different types of signals, like what is the purpose? What is the outcome? How are we acting off that signal?
Yes.
And I think too many times we overinvest in these signals and people are just sitting on these signals. They're not even looking at them. They don't know how to act off of them. There's no place to act off of them. So I kind of got a little off track there from your original question, but I think anytime you're looking to bring in signals, make sure that you're operationalizing on it first from like a marketing perspective and second from, okay, how is the rest of the org going to respond to this too? Otherwise, it's just going to get lost in BC does noise.
Yeah. Sales does not necessarily want more leads. They want high quality leads, right? And so it's just to build off what your comment there, because I've also heard you speak about this and I think it was fantastic, is how we enable internally the organization, specifically with sales. They should develop a point of view around this, as opposed to a point of view around the problems that they may be facing and the problems that your company solves, not the point of view around your product, right? Can you talk a little bit more about that? Like, how does that get operationalized? I guess would be the first question, and maybe an example of what that point of view might look like.
Yeah, so I think that, like, when we're talking about personalized messaging, I think if it can't be understood only by the person you're sending it to, it's really not personalization. It's customization for the sake of personalization. So to me, and I think this is what you're talking about, is like, what is our personalization point of view? How do we make it meaningful for the company we're selling to, so we're not just talking at them? I think it's by deeply understanding what are the account's pain points, what are their needs, and with what we have available for us today, pretty much most companies can do this for free or with like a $20 license to an AI tool.
It's
tell me within the, like, I can share a prompt with any listeners if they want to connect with me on LinkedIn afterwards. I've got a fantastic prompt that's pretty detailed and it's going to be very time-based and specific. So tell me within the last 6 months, were there any quotes from podcasts, press releases, LinkedIn announcements, blog posts from X company that were specifically something like, enter your tool value prop here can sell for, please extract from me those quotes, let me know, and then craft super meaningful personalized outreach that shows that we are able to solve their unique problems. So I think that there's never been a better opportunity for personalization today.
Yeah.
I think that we could get into the trap like we did, I think, with the marketing automation platform when we just did first name token personalization here, right? And then we're still doing that 10, 20 years later, and it's terrible and it's spammy. Like, we got to be really careful still. So even when I have things like AI intervene with something like an email outbound like that, I always tell my reps to review it before they send it. Because the thing on top of that is that they're now getting enabled. They're not relying on the tool. So when they do call that person and they get live on the phone, like, that's where you can make or break a conversion. So I think that AI is going to get you more than 80% of the way there. Mm-hmm. But I don't encourage a full automation of this because I think that the disconnect is going to happen very quickly and that's very costly. So a little bit of a rant there.
No, I love it. I completely agree with you. So just one build off on the AI piece. So that prompt that you'd mentioned, incredibly useful and important. If we just more generally talk about AI as a concept and specifically within ABX, where do you see the best opportunities as far as, I mean, is it research? Is it ICP definition? Like, where, how are you leveraging AI for your clients and where do you think the greatest potential is?
Yeah, from my perspective, for me, it's been literally my data scientist that I wish I had access to my entire career. What I'm able to do now with AI as like a literally a thought partner is the speed to value is so much quicker because I have worked with other consultants, I have worked with platforms, BI tools, etc. All of their professional consulting services never have gotten me to the point where I can get to within a matter of minutes now with AI. So I think like professionals that know how to spot trends, what to look for, what to ask, what to prompt, from like a analysis perspective, you are going to win right now. And you may think that you're not even using it that intelligently, but if you're using it that way at all, you are way ahead of the curve. Yeah. So from my perspective, I don't think I could do what I'm doing today without it. So an analysis perspective, it's very, very good at spotting patterns and trends. So that's going to help you with any analysis, but also like in market reaction.
Yeah.
I think from a sales perspective, it's very helpful from an account intelligence gathering perspective. I've never had a sales team tell me like, oh, this tool for account intelligence is like I'm married to it, right? Like, we're always searching for something better and better and better. But it gets to, I think, 80% of the way that all these other tools in the past from that perspective haven't. So I think it just enables reps, and it kind of goes to what I was saying earlier too. Like, it's just very good at spotting patterns.
Yeah.
And so if you're prompting it really well, whether that's from an account research perspective, whether that's from a ICP analysis perspective, like, that's where I think it really wins. I'm still not sold on it from a perspective of like creative outputs, right? I think we're still really far off from like very, very, very impactful like AI image generation. I think we're still pretty off from even big campaign briefs, although it's pretty good. But I think that's where we have opportunity to shine right now in our relationship building activities. So leverage AI, like short sentence, short blurb, leverage AI for any kind of pattern pickups that will help you just act on things quicker.
Yeah.
I have one more question for you specifically around account-based before we transition into our lightning round. The question would be, what have I not asked you yet that you think would be important for our audience to know around account-based strategy?
That's a really good question. I think that maybe you haven't poked holes in me enough about why this isn't just marketing, right? Why are all the principles we're talking about, like, why isn't this just marketing's job? And I look, it's very beneficial for me to have this be like a specialty and its own thing. And I think it will be for a very long time. But I think that what I love about account-based marketing in general is just how buyer-centric it is. Mm-hmm. And it's serving two purposes, right? To close deals and also for the client to get a better solution to their problems. But at the end of the day, it's just really good marketing that's like rooted in buyer centricity.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Let me transition to the lightning round. It's a little bit more fun, more personal. So you've been now a advisor to B2B SaaS firms for a couple of years. What is the favorite part of being fractional leader and advisor to companies?
I get to be with so many creative teams, and I like the speed to knowledge for me is so much quicker than if I was just in-house, which has its own benefits, but I'm just exposed to so many different people and backgrounds and ideas and even product development. So the knowledge download, it's been amazing.
Yeah. Now there's always going to be a flip side to that question, which is, what don't you like, or ask a different way, what's really hard about being an advisor as opposed to an in-house person?
I'm a very big people person. I really like, I love like my community. I love being recognized for my work. I'll just say it. So oftentimes when you're not really in the team, you can often be like a forgotten cog in the machine a lot easier. So that would be like my personal flaw downfall of it.
Yeah. Where would you recommend people who are trying to upskill themselves on ABX in their own organization? What resources, communities that you would you point them to help upskill themselves?
I think podcasts, like, these are how I got up to speed really quickly, was just hearing a lot of different people's takes. So I think podcasts like these are just honestly really valuable resources. There are definitely certification courses out there, and I do think it's fair to plug Demand Basin, their recent partnership with ForgeX on this really, really great certification program they just released. And what I love about it is because it was grounded in practitioners advising them on what does ABM really look like in practice. So that's a really fabulous one as well that you should check out. But overall, I think too, there's so many different communities, LinkedIn, Reddit, Slack communities that you can join where like just ask people like the real questions, because no matter how fancy the brand is, like this is a hard thing, and most people don't talk about how hard it is. So just join those, listen, and ask the honest questions. People will be real with you.
Yep. Okay, so what do you do in your spare time? How do you decompress, and what do you like to enjoy to refresh yourself?
I am pretty big into like physical activity. So if I'm not at my desk, I'll be cycling, doing yoga. I don't do it as often as I used to, but I used to do aerial silks, which is the like the two silk things you'll see at Cirque du Soleil. And that was like just so good for my soul. So anytime I can just get in my body and dance and move, like, I'm the best version of myself. So I always try and do more of that.
Yeah, wonderful. Last question. How can people find you if they have any additional questions or they want to connect?
I'm only on LinkedIn. That's my only social media platform. So that is the best place to find me. It's Corina, C-O-R-R-I-N-A, Owens. Please feel free to reach out, connect. Always happy to chat and learn with others.
Wonderful. Well, Karina, thank you so much for joining us today. I think this was a wonderful episode, a lot of knowledge dropped. So I appreciate your time and I look forward to connecting in the future.
Thanks, Randy. Appreciate you.
All right. Have a great day.
You too.